super strong, supernatural, and super bad. His punch can topple a skyscraper. His kick can split the earth in two. More destructive than an earthquake, mightier than a tidal wave. A one-man disaster area.
42nd Street Pete.
Shot full of lead and he still ain't dead. Jump back, Jack, for your skull is cracked.
42nd Street Pete.
Ladies and gentlemen, the man who thinks the phrase "the dead are rising" means he just took his Viagra, 42nd Street Pete.
Tonight, we are returning to the dead, the living dead, because there's a great convention happening in Jersey called Saturday Nightmares, and we're going to bring on the promoter right after this message.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Visit our concession and see for yourself the delicious treats, drinks, and snacks awaiting you. If you are thirsty, try ice-cold soft drinks or a cup of hot, flavorful coffee. Get something to go with it, like a sizzling and satisfying hot dog or a tasty, tender sandwich. Try one of these delicious treats and you'll be back at the concession for more before the show is over. The service at our concession is friendly and efficient.
What a big bag of Skittles. Lemon, lime, grape, watermelon. Oh!
Jackalope 105 FM.
Well, tonight I got a special guest because there's something new and interesting happening in Jersey for a change, beside all the corruption and all the other shit that goes on. You know, there's a couple conventions that do run in Jersey, but now there's a new kid on the block, and it's called Saturday Nightmares. And what's new and different about this is it's actually going to take place in an old grindhouse-type theater down in Jersey City. So let me introduce my guest right now, Mike Lisa, the promoter of Saturday Night Nightmares. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Thanks, Pete. Saturday Nightmares, basically the theater we're having it at is an old Wonder Palace from the 1930s. So it has that Phantom of the Opera sort of, you know, feel to it. And it really complements what we're doing, which is really just trying to celebrate classic horror, you know, and bring that into the limelight. Our first show, we wanted to kick it off with George Romero and his films because they're really the main inspiration for what we're doing, you know, is celebrating the works of Romero and everybody involved with his films and his crew through the past 30, 40 years.
And you have basically people from all three Dead films there, too.
Yeah, most of the cast of Night of the Living Dead is there. Dawn of the Dead, minus Galen Roth. Day of the Dead, we have Joe Pilato and Gary Farr. And, you know, we also have some other people like Harry Manfredini, who is the composer of all the Friday the 13th films, Louise Roby from the TV series Friday the 13th. You know, and it sort of tips off to future shows where we'd like to sort of indulge in those themes as well. But the first show is a Romero theme. That, you know, those guys, they're the main inspiration for what we're doing, you know, and they'll always have a home base with us. Yeah, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead especially, that's something that's really personal, you know, to me. That's a movie that really goes deep with myself. It really started out as a sort of Dawn of the Dead reunion. And then, you know, we said, well, if we're going to have those guys, why not have the night crew? And then if we're going to have them, why not have Day? You know, it just makes sense to have them all under one roof. And, I mean, really, anybody that's a Romero fan is going to be in heaven, this theater, for 3 days.
Yeah, and so, if you've never seen this stuff on a big screen, this is the way to go, because we showed Night of the Living Dead. We were running the Pioneer shows at midnight on Halloween 2008.
Yeah,
and it packed the house. And there's no comparison to seeing stuff on a big screen. You know, it just comes down to that.
Yeah, it really, you know. And being in this theater, it really brings you back to when these films premiered. Like, you know, if the movie's from 1968 and you're sitting in this theater watching it, you feel like you're back in 1968. It's amazing.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. Somebody was even asking me the other day about, you know, what were the top five films that basically flatlined me and influenced me? Well, number one was Night of the Living Dead. You know, because I didn't see it in 68 when it came out. I caught it in 69. It was playing on the bottom half of Double Bill with Slaves. And I saw that in an all-black theater down Orange. And, you know, you're seeing Slaves, and I'm like, I'm not scared. I'm not going to leave. I'm not scared. I'm not going to leave. Night of the Living Dead comes on. I'm fucking scared out of my skull. I'm going to get the fuck out of here. And that had on me.
Well,
did you know that Night of the Living Dead was my first drive-in experience? I saw The Boy Who Cried Werewolf with the movie, and the third movie was Night of the Living Dead, And it was that was my first childhood memory.
Same here. The 60s and 70s are really, you know, that's like the new classic horror. Like back in the 60s and 70s, everybody looked to Lugosi and Karloff to the 30s. That was classic. Now this right. is like the new classic, you know. And the great thing about it is these guys are all still around. I mean, you know, and they're all still highly involved in their craft and what they had started. March 19th through 21st, Friday through Sunday.
Yeah, you're hearing it the week before it happens, therefore you have ample time to make your right. plans and get your ass down to Jersey City. And we're actually going to give away a couple tickets, but we're going to get we got some other guests we're going to bring on right after this little station break. So we'll be right back.
Welcome to a night of total terror. Night of the living dead, the dead who live on living flesh, the dead whose haunted souls hunt the living whose bodies are the only food for these ungodly creatures. An experience in shock more shattering than your strangest nightmare. Night of the living dead.
Who's the only one here who knows the illegal ninja moves from the government?
Jackalope 105 FM.
Our guests right now are going to be appearing at this convention. The co-writer of Night of the Living Dead and one of the stars of Night of the Living Dead. Welcome to the show, John Russo and Russ Striner.
My pleasure. 42nd Street. How are you doing?
Great. Yourself? How you guys doing? You're coming back to Jersey, I see.
Absolutely. 9 days and counting. We're really looking forward to it. This beautifully restored theater and such a great show to kick things off. Yes, indeed.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's because of you guys. I mean, you know, forget it. You're the inspiration for it. So it's all derived from what you started.
Right. You know, the thing is, as John knows with me, you know, we've met several mm-hmm. times, and you were a huge influence on my life. I mean, without you, you were my first childhood memory, man. The whole Night of the Living Dead, that entire movie was my first childhood memory of theaters at the drive-in. And without you, I wouldn't even be doing what I'm doing now. So thank you on a personal level mm-hmm. from me.
Well, you're welcome. Well, thank you. Without the fans, we wouldn't have a career.
Well, there you
I'll
go.
Tell you. I'll tell you something. I never told anybody this. I don't think in this gathering, but I saw Night of the Living Dead on the big screen close to 100 times. What I used to do too was drag people to see it. Like, you got to see this, and they either loved it or like, we're gonna fucking kill you if you ever do this again. That was the reaction. They either loved mm-hmm. it or they wanted to kill me. I took
How old were you when you first saw it?
When I first saw it, I was just telling Mike, I was 16. I missed it in 68, and I caught it on a double bill with Slaves mm-hmm. in 69. And it
yeah,
was in
really well.
it was in an all-black theater, and I'm sitting there like, I'm not going to be scared. I'm not going to run away. And then Night of the Living Dead comes on. I'm like, I'm scared. I want to get the fuck out of here. I'm scared.
Okay. Well, you remember Vince Stravinsky? He was our production manager on the film, and he was the fellow who shot Ben. And he saw the movie with a almost totally black audience in Pittsburgh, and he said he had to sneak out the back door. He said that he was afraid he was going to get killed. You know, as soon as they saw that this is the guy that shot Ben, he said the people were screaming, yelling at the screen, and oh, why did you mm-hmm. do that? And you know, really getting totally involved. Was it that way when you saw it?
This was the same weekend that Martin Luther King Jr. got shot, too, which is another, added way.
Yeah. Are you going to be at Mike's show?
He better. He's got the same area code. Yeah.
The reason I ask is it would be so great to see you there because over the last several days I've been talking with George Romero, and I got to tell you that the whole Night of the Living Dead crowd is pretty fired up about getting back together at this show and seeing a bunch of old friends, and you are certainly one of them.
Oh.
Yeah, that's for sure.
It'll be an honor.
Well, I have another thing going on there. You know, what you said, Todd, kind of ties in with
My editor from Kensington Books is coming to the show, and right in the days before the show starts, I'm going into New York to meet with Gary Goldstein, the editor, and he is working on bringing out the Night of the Living Dead novel and the Return of the Living Dead novel in one big trade paperback.
Oh, cool.
First time.
Beautiful.
So I'm going to meet with the sales staff, but the thing that Gary told me when we first got in touch with each other, that Night of the Living Dead changed his life, and he saw it in the early 70s, around 71 or 72. He's been in publishing for over 30 years, so you know, it's just funny. Just one more person who says that movie had a huge influence on his career.
It changed my life pretty substantially, too. This is Russ Striner. I start off as the young Johnny and end up a zombie. It had a pretty big impact on my life, I'll tell you.
Yeah, he's still working around graveyards.
Yeah.
Now, John, you're taking pre-orders on that, on the books, right?
So Gary mm-hmm. tells me that he's really rushing them to get things ready for your convention. So
right.
I think that that will happen. He said that the pre-sales are going really great, so he wants me to come in and do this meeting with the sales department, and that's something that no published author should pass up, and that's really important. And so many people have wanted to read the original novel, which has been out of print for a long time, and now they're going to have their chance.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I still have that somewhere.
It's a collector's item now.
Yeah.
It's a real collector's
item. I'm not going
to
sell it.
That's my problem. I won't sell any of that stuff.
It's just, you know, Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. All the fans mm-hmm. of those films, this is really just like a dream under one roof, you know, and that's what we wanted to create.
That's
for the
absolutely
first show,
terrific.
You
know?
And that's why I sort of reached out to you guys, because when I first learned it, I said, you know, what an opportunity for the fans, because number one, they get to meet you guys. Number two, they get to see all this stuff up on the big screen where it was meant to be seen, instead of a 19-inch, you know, whatever the hell they're working
on
now.
Yeah, right.
And the
yeah.
venue, you know, for people who have been to a lot of conventions, this one is really unique, because some years ago, there were two midnight screenings at a theater in Lansing, and we were guests there, and that was a pretty nice event. But this one is that particular event was just, you know, Night of the Living Dead and midnight screenings. There's much more to the Saturday Nightmares, and the venue is unique, and you know, Mike, like what you told, a unique venue for the fans, and not a run of the mill, because sometimes there are too many conventions and they kind of all blur together. But yours is something the fans should come out for. Russ and I haven't seen George for probably over a year, because he's been busy making movies and lives in Toronto now. So we used to see him quite often in Pittsburgh, but now he's in Toronto. It's going to be fun for us to get together and have a few beers and reminisce about the old days.
Oh, yeah.
We're hoping that the New York skyline will give George a good inspiration for the next zombie film.
The city's pretty much dead, so that's a pretty much inspiration for anybody now.
Exactly.
It's never going to be what it was. Let's put it that way, you know?
One thing I have to commend everyone on that's involved here. One thing I love about the Living Dead films and about, you know, I know that everyone goes through their business practices and everyone goes through their ups and downs, but you guys have been consistent in the way that you have respect for the fans. There's no egos involved and everyone has such a great time. And honestly, that memory of Russ saying, "They're coming to get you, Barbara," which he's going to have to say before he leaves this show, has stayed with me my entire life. You know, there's people out there that have huge egos that have done much less.
Yep. Well, you'd do the line better than I do. If you had auditioned for the part of Johnny, you may have ended up as Johnny, and I would have been cutting grass somewhere.
He was three years old then. That wouldn't work.
That would have been a little tough.
Yeah. I pontificate about seeing these things on the big screen that people look at me and go, "I was 12 years old when that came out." Well, sorry if I'm ageless in that respect, but, you know, I just remember the shit like that, you know?
I was lucky. I got to see it, too.
I really
yeah.
appreciate what you said about, you know, the fact that we do keep the fans uppermost in our minds, and it's been that way from the beginning. When we were in our first script sessions and all the way through the making of Night of the Living Dead, we talked a lot about giving horror fans their money's worth for one of the few times that they ever did get their money's worth, because there were always these things about attack of the giant grasshopper and attack of the giant squid and every other thing, and you went to see these films hoping somehow maybe one of them would be a decent film, and then you were always disappointed, you know, almost always. And we wanted to have the fans leave the theater and not be disappointed. And that's been uppermost our entire career. Is it's like trying to be honest with the material and true to the concept and true to what the fans want. You know, we go to going to these conventions is really great for us. It helps us keep our careers on track, because you meet the fans, you get a great sense as to what they're all about and what they really want and what they appreciate. And I think people that stay home, I mean, I'm talking about people in the business, the writers and producers and directors who stay home and don't get out there and meet fans, they don't get that kind of input, and they're kind of gapped out, you know?
I agree.
Well, one of the ways I this is Russ again, one of the ways I look at it is that it's in a certain way, it's a partnership between the filmmakers and the fans. At least that's the way I feel about it, because one doesn't survive without the other. And if you can't relate to your fan base, if you can't get out and shake hands and look in their eyes, then where are you? You know, I mean, that's really a very important part of the business.
I agree.
That's true. I mean, it's like a yin and yang, you know, they kind of just fit together.
Exactly right.
We all wind up at Cinema Wasteland every once in a while, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, with John, I was just starting to make films, and it was so great because he put out some books about filmmaking, and it was really great to be able to read experience of a guy who loves horror and who creates horror, because at the time there weren't as many. Now everyone's writing books on making movies, but back then there weren't very many, and John put out a book that was very helpful in many different areas because he talked about the aesthetics of making a horror film. And when you're a young filmmaker, where are you going to find books like that? They didn't make them.
Yeah, I mean, crucial.
That's one of the most gratifying things. You know, people ask me, well, what do you like best about the business? And one of the most gratifying things is to have been instrumental in showing other filmmakers how to do it and inspiring their careers. Russ and I are doing that to this day. I mean, you know, we are the a program called the Master Mentoring Program at DuBois Business College, and that's where our movie making course is. And I tell you, the work that our students are doing right now would just blow you away. And we
saw some work today that was, it's way, way, way beyond what you would think about seeing as a student effort. There's a group of young whippersnappers that are just knocking it dead.
That's going to be another attraction at the convention too. At Saturday Nightmares, because we are going to screen a film where our students. It's called The Song of the Dead. It's not a zombie film. Russ produced it, and I wrote and directed it, but our students did the cinematography, the lighting and the sound and everything, and they, on another project, they won the 48-hour film competition in Pittsburgh for best cinematography.
Wow.
And so people that come to the convention will get to see this 20-minute featurette they did that is the lead into a full-length feature, and you'll see the really, really good cinematography that our students have done.
That's awesome.
Yeah, really cool. You know, that's another thing too. There's a lot of these conventions don't give independent films a shot to be shown. They just sit there running off to Freddy Jason crap hour after hour. And Mike, it looks like you're starting a little venue. You're letting them do this here. And I know Ken up at Wasteland lets the indie things run. So that's always a good thing.
On our end, it wasn't really an active mindset when we sat down and said, hey, let's do a whole portion of the show independent films. This stuff is just sort of happening naturally. John and Russ came to me and said, hey, we got this 20-minute feature. I said, great. From you guys, because you know, we want to highlight new and current projects that you're working on, you know, along with the past projects.
We want to get the student work out there because, you know, actually the ones that have graduated, some of them are already working in the business, and most of them are. And the class that's in there now, they're really super. I really appreciate what you said, Todd, about, you know, the appreciation of the books because, you know, I put my heart into those books, did 3 movie-making books, and thank you very much for your comments.
You know, one of the underrated classics, though, I know we're talking about Night of the Living Dead, but we also have to mention here an underrated film is Midnight, and I think Midnight has got a huge audience out there as well, John, and I'd like to see someone be able to remake that with the technology of today and with the money, you know?
You took the words out of my mouth. I keep saying I would love to remake that movie. I mean, that, you know, the joke of it is because of the way we were ripped off with Night of the Living Dead, you know, the movie was making a ton of money, and yet George Romero and Russ and I, we had to make our next 3 or 4 films on, you know, dirt cheap.
Yep.
Midnight, the novel sold, you know, tremendously well all over the world, and yet when I made the movie, the whole thing was $70,000, 35mm, a mix at Magno Sound in New York where Woody Allen mixes his film. Every single thing paid for. But the crew was me and 3 other guys. You know, there are a lot of people in the credits, but most of them only showed up to help maybe one day, you know. So it was me and 3 other guys, and I couldn't afford to do the New York scenes. And they were sending me 3 rolls of film at a time, and I was always running out of film and driving all over Pittsburgh to borrow film stock. You know, so many headaches with that film, and yet people like it, but, you know, the story works for people, and so it really should be remade. I'd love to do that.
I'd love to see a widescreen copy come out instead of that flat pan and scan that they put out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, there's always Blu-ray.
Well, it's been released, it's been almost in constant release somewhere. Lionsgate has the rights now. And, you know, it started out Vidmark, and then it became Trimark, and then Lionsgate, and so they don't want to release the rights, but they have brought it out several times on DVD, and they want to keep it in their library. So, but I do own the remake rights.
Oh, cool!
And that would be terrific to be able to remake that picture.
Oh yeah, and now that you know the technology is caught up with your ideas, man, you could really do some stuff, because I remember back then you wanted to do more effects, but I'd read that you didn't have the funds to do them. Well, now you can do that kind of stuff.
I was out in my driveway at 4:00 in the morning setting myself on fire, basically. You know, the bad guy gets burnt to a crisp in the end, but I was, well, how am I going to do this with no budget, you know? So I actually had film cans that I had a gravel driveway at that house before we put the, you know, paved it. So I'm out in this gravel driveway at 4:00 in the morning, and I have big film cans full of either lighter fluid or gasoline or what, and I'm trying to figure out, well, how can I make this look like he's on fire? And had to make a dummy and everything, and you know, it kind of gets by the, you know, the effect, you know what's happening, it works fairly well, but that's part of the charm
of the older film is that, you know, it wasn't CGI. You really had to be ultra creative and try to patch off these effects,
even if
you know, on a more physical level, and even, you know, you watch the effects in the old films, but you know, it sells me more than what I see now, which I watch, you know, anything that comes out now, I'm just totally taken out of it.
And I agree.
You know, that's why I'm against remakes. I mean, unless you're, you know, directly involved with
it. Yeah, but this would be different because if I could make this right, there were so many character development things in the whole New York episodes and everything that I couldn't afford to do, and that I mean, the atmospheric stuff that I had to leave
out. Well, that's
out
different,
would,
you know, locations
really
and stuff,
that.
But. Yeah,
that CGI's got to go.
You know, the funny thing about being out in my driveway with gasoline, that even came from Night of the Living Dead, because I was the zombie that got set on fire with a Molotov cocktail sequence, and I
did
stuff without
I did that stunt without an asbestos suit and everything, you know, so so I knew that I could do something.
Lord. You were also the zombie that came in the back door that got the tire iron through the head, too, so don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was easier getting stabbed in the head with a tire iron than it was getting set on fire.
Did you get shot, too?
I tell the fans that the tire iron's still in there. We had to saw it off front and back and do a skin graft, and when I would go past the junkyard, that big magnet's a real hazard.
That's awesome.
Hey, Mike, you wanted to give out some passes. Being that we have, you know, the two originals here, why don't we throw out a couple of trivia questions and let these guys...
Yeah, man, I got, you know, a stack of weekend passes here that are just dying to fly.
We don't know any trivia. We only know important answers.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. John, try with a trivia question.
Where can you... Okay, I'll start with an easy one.
Okay.
How many trucks were used in Night of the Living Dead? There's one truck that gets blown up. Okay, but how many trucks were used in the movie
total
to represent one truck?
Awesome.
And where should they email the answers to you, Mike, or to me?
They can email it to info@saturdaynightmares.com.
Okay, that's it.
Somebody's going to.
Okay, so he's even given a hint.
Yep.
Yeah.
Russ, you got one?
Yeah, there is a common misconception here in southwestern Pennsylvania that everyone lays claim to the fact that Night of the Living Dead was shot in their hometown, in their backyard. But the question for the fans is, what is the true answer for the name of the town in which Night of the Living Dead was filmed? In southwestern Pennsylvania.
And you send your answer to info@saturdaynightmares.com, and if you win, you'll be notified, and Mike will have your ticket at the door. Now, I got a trivia question I'm going to throw in. What was the original title of Night of the Living Dead? Because it wasn't Night of the Living Dead originally. What was the original title, which is probably the reason the copyright got screwed up, you know, if I'm correct on that assumption. But
the change had a lot to do with that.
Yeah.
There was actually more than one title. There was a working title that we referred to the film as we were making it. Then there was the name of the title of the film that we were originally going to call it. And then there was yet another title before it became Night of the Living Dead. So now you really have to do some digging to come up with that chain of titles.
That's awesome.
You're going to give somebody a stroke on that. I got to give a hint because, you know, I can see somebody sitting there going, oh, shit, I thought I had that. And at some point, you can't think of something Egyptian, and that's the title I'm looking for. And again, send your answers to info@saturdaynightmares.com.
That's
now,
awesome.
Another thing I understand that you gentlemen are now working with a manager, a keeper of the legends or something?
Yeah. You mean the people that book us into conventions?
Right, right.
Billy Graham and Rob Lucas.
Yes, Billy Graham. And we were supposed to call him.
Call Billy, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, let's take a break, and we're going to be back with Half-Breed Billy Graham.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Hungry, but the ordinary things don't seem to appeal? Then try one of our frozen delicacies. They're taste treats that hit the spot, refreshing and cooling without being too filling, satisfying without being too rich. Give yourself and the whole gang a taste dividend. Select the frozen treat that pleases you.
This is Rudy Ray Moore. I'm the Human Tornado. I chain down thunder and handcuff lightning. I'm so damn strong, it's sometimes frightening. The Human Tornado. I grabbed a star traveling a million miles a minute and slowed it down to the state speed limit. The Human Tornado. Rated R. Under 17, not admitted without a parent or a note from your jailer.
Look, whose guitars are these? Move them around. You had me. You had me at hello. Maybe it's the Crown Royal.
Jackalope 105 FM.
Hello.
Hello.
Okay, we are now joined by the keeper of the legends, so to speak, and the leader of Cult Fiction, a wrestling faction down in CZW. Welcome, Half-Breed Billy Graham, to the
What's
show.
What's up, Pete? Hello, Pete. Hello, Jack and Russ, who have been...
Hey, how you doing, Billy?
Hello, how are you doing, man?
Great.
I'm enjoying the break in the cold here in the Northeast, finally.
Yeah, really.
Oh, so are we.
Yeah.
Billy's been shoveling for the past 3 weeks from 3 weeks ago.
By hand.
I think you got more snow than we did, but we had it piled up about 6 feet here.
Not that last one, though. It's interesting. But we're here to talk about you guys being at Saturday Nightmares, right? Is that not the...
That's true.
Pete and me know each other and know people like Madman Pondo, like common friends, and, you know, Pete's like a wrestling guy, too, as well as his expertise in horror and all things grindhouse, sticky, and you know, all that good stuff.
Yeah, we've mostly been covering, you know, what a great show this is shaping up to be. And everyone from the whole night crew from George Romero on down are really looking forward to it, 9 days and counting. And we'll all gather and have a great time in Jersey City.
It's so cool, and they got, I mean, Mike Lisa and his whole staff have done such a great job for people that are just, this is their first show, and, you know, just the specialty of it, you know, that it's a little more specialized, and there's a theme to it, and the beautiful venue that they have that's just breathtaking.
Oh, yeah.
If you go on the website, even see the pictures, anybody listening to this, it'll just take your breath away. It's a unique atmosphere, and then every night them screening prints of the films in that theater.
Right.
I mean, I love all the films that they're playing. Wow. So I guess you guys talked about everything they're doing like that, and who all's going to be there. And
I don't remember that we mentioned the Lowe's, the name of the theater, the Lowe's Jersey Theater.
Lowe's Landmark Theater, yeah.
Landmark, okay.
Certainly, you know, a great group of people, you know, with George and alumni from all three of the Dead films, Adrian Barbeau and Harry Manfredini, the composer of Friday the 13th, Mama, and all that good stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, I just think it's going to be a really unique event. I think that the fans, between the atmosphere of the building, the films, the way they're showing them like that, and just the,
it is a great venue, actually, for meeting fans. It's, you know, it's not a big concrete hall. It's the setting is really movie oriented, and it couldn't be a better place to talk with fans of these various films. You know?
And I got to say, I am a huge fan myself. I will not deny my fan side ever. I'm not that proud. And so, you know, I can tell everybody that here's a guy who was the biggest Night of the Living Dead fan of the Dead trilogy in the world, and now all these people that we all grew up loving and all are my friends, and, you know, trust me to help them out. It's an awesome thing, and that, I can only tell you, I'm living proof that that's because they're all such gracious, humble, down-to-earth people. I mean, you meet them, you know them, and you become part of the family of everybody that's, you know, these films have touched and things like, you know, it means something different to everybody in their own way.
Well, isn't the documentary that you and Rob produced, the one for the fire, is going to be shown, isn't it?
Yeah, on Sunday. That was the one I was making the jokes about, because we all...
Oh, okay. I didn't...
You know, the order still from the leader of Cult Fiction is that any Cult Fiction followers, you CZW fans, if you're hearing this, you better be at Saturday Nightmares. Just buy a ticket, shut up, do what I tell you, because... You know, if you don't do what I tell you, you know, I'm going to send brain damage or somebody to give you an attitude adjustment, maybe pick you upside down, shake you a little bit. So either come willingly of your own accord or be forced by this other side of me to go through unconventional means.
I know the guys on the other side, and you do not want to fuck with them. Let's put it that way.
Oh, man. You just dropped an F-bomb, man.
I can do that. It's not FCC, dude. I can do that. It's my fucking show, you know?
Fucking Christ. That makes me really fucking a lot more relaxed. Than,
okay, I want to do that because, you know,
CZ fucking W. Fiction to the fucking Dead. Night of the fucking Living Dead, people. Dawn of the fucking Dead. Saturday motherfucking Nightmares. You people got that? That's the language that you can understand on this show, obviously, now. So I'm saying come that way. Russ and Jack have now questioned the sanity of appearing in conjunction with
me on this. No. We understand completely.
Well,
we got you categorized from the beginning.
Right.
What the people really need to understand is, and I've had lots of late night conversations. I'm here. Billy and I have talked to death about this, but this is all, I mean, as far as what we're doing with Saturday Nightmares Expo, it's coming completely from our hearts. I mean, we're not, this isn't like, hey, let's put on a show and make tons and tons of money. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, let's get everybody together that, you know, truly loves the genre and you know, just celebrate it for 3 days straight and get everybody in the same room.
The best thing you're doing is you're putting it back in a grindhouse where it all started and people can talk back to the screen.
This is the same theater that showed Dracula, 1931, 32, Bela Lugosi, Frankenstein. Then years later, you know, Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead, they were all, you know, originally screened at this theater. I said, what better place?
Russ was saying about a better atmosphere,
yeah.
You know, and what I was saying about to watch the films in the theater. Now you tell us this history of it. And I got to throw in, Pete, what Mike just said about what was behind this show for him and the heart, and not, you know, it's not just that this is not some, you know, kind of, you know, let's get rich quick kind of scheme or anything.
No.
Well, I'm here to say that what he said, I can absolutely testify from the true self, not Mr. Cult Fiction, that, you know, as Billy Graham, I'm telling you that Mike has just busted his balls, literally put his heart and soul into it. He should have 8 days a week and 3 mics, and I can relate to all that.
Well, everything looks great. The website, the ads in Fangoria,
absolutely.
Which I have one in front of me while we're talking, and I don't think we mentioned Ken Foray yet, but he's going to be there.
Ken Foray, he's been great, too.
Yeah. You know,
he's on board 100%.
You know, putting that kind of heart into it, people, I can testify that. I know that everybody that's associated with Legend Keeper absolutely appreciates that they're being treated, the way this event has been built. That awesome TV commercial, man, I love that. I thought that was just like, you know, right in the spirit of everything, Pete. I'm sure you dug that, man. And I'm just telling you guys that this one is really something. I think you come, it's going to be a really special time. It's going to be intimate. And, I mean, if you want to know, you want to, you know, get that down with it, I think, you know, you got no excuse.
Well, another little item of interest is that George Cassano will be with us, and he played the sheriff in Night of the Living Dead. And he never did any conventions till about 2 years ago whenever we did the 40th anniversary tour. And he has a lot of fun at the conventions, and he's very congenial with the fans. And so people that... you know, a lot of people who may have met the rest of us have not had a chance to meet George Cassano.
And Cuss is a hoot, man. Cuss is awesome, man.
Yeah.
Cuss.
Russ had that great line, "They're coming to get you, Barbara," and then Cuss had the one that he actually ad-libbed, "They're dead, they're all messed up."
I love it. They're all messed up. Yeah.
You guys had covered everybody that was going to be there. So is there anybody that we're leaving out here? Do we talk about Gary Clark, Joe
Gary Clark. Gary Clark's a great guy. I got to give him a call, tell him I'm going to stop.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Galen Ross from Dawn of the Dead, David Emge, Scott Reiniger.
John Amplis, we're very excited to have him on board.
Jim Kruk.
Jim Kruk, the helicopter zombie. Yep. Bill Heinzman will be there.
Oh, good, Bill.
I don't know if he's going to come in his drove or.
I think on Saturdays, I think he does do his full zombie makeup.
He does the whole gimmick.
Yeah.
Usually on Saturday, Bill does the makeup of the Living Dead once again, and
awesome.
Of course, everybody loves that because it's always a great photo op and everything. And I'll tell you what, don't expect everybody to be sitting there all sedate, people, if you never met any of my friends here, because there's definitely a lot of exciting, you know, shtick and clowning around and good, you know, friendly interaction going on. Great photo ops, man. Great merchandise.
And we can't really forget, Tom Savini's going to be there.
Tom Savini, man, the master of...
He's coming in. He's coming in Thursday night with his whole setup.
Director of Night of Living Dead 90, been in so many films,
yeah.
You can't name them all, probably within your time frame.
I have to tell you guys something. I commend you on the intimate setting, because a lot of us have got to meet you at conventions and things, but it's not the same. This is going to be, people are able to actually, in a more relaxed area, they're not standing in line for like 30 hours.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be really nice.
Well, Todd, I'll tell you, if it was up to me personally, every show would be Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Day of the Dead. I don't want to do the second show if we can't. I mean, that's why I keep saying you guys will always have a home base with us,
yep.
Because, you know, that's it. That's where it all comes from. And it's also, you know, all of you, you always have the attitude to just get out there and do it.
you know, and that's really what was the initial drive for us doing this.
You know what?
You know,
Mike, when you talk like that, it makes me think I need to hire you as one of my propaganda ministers for Cult Fiction.
The movies used to always be advertised, you know, 3 years in production, 5 years in production. Well, I met Mike, I think, 2 or 3 years ago when Mike first started talking about doing this show. So people should
right.
realize that three years?
It's been a long year, I'll put it that way. It's been a very long year.
The lifetime of being a fan is the beginning of it, and anything else you do along
yeah.
the way. So, I mean, he put a lifetime of work into this, people, is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? And he's doing a damn good job of it.
That's true.
And
yeah.
people are talking about it, because there's another show running in South Jersey, I think, this weekend. Nobody's
yeah.
talking about that, but people are talking about this. So that, you know, speaks volumes about what's going on here, you know?
I think, and from what I understand, there's been people from Europe buying tickets, Mike, like, to come
yeah.
to this.
Yeah, we got
people
coming in from the UK, Norway, Italy. You know, I mean, it's just...
That speaks of some kind of special event happening to me.
Absolutely.
I mean, and then another special event will be that as soon as the event is closed, the nearest bar room to that is where I and several of my friends
mm-hmm.
will be cavorting about, probably, you know, bordering on being very entertaining or getting carted off by the Jersey City Police Department, depending on what day of the week it is. Gary Quar and Joe Pilato and Russ Streiner and Jack Russo and Bill Heinzman
and Kyra Shine.
Kyra and Joe Pilato and you, Mike,
and
Pete, you, and yes, and on and on and on down the list. You know, who knows, Scotty Ryan, I mean, who knows what could happen, let
yeah.
alone the fans themselves.
Why don't we just wipe out a liquor store and buy a couple bongs and just stay at the theater, you know? That's
well,
the
I'll tell
go.
You that...
It's strictly for medical purposes, don't worry
okay.
about it.
There's no liquor allowed inside the theater itself because it's a historical building and they're very...
So if liquor
that.
Is in my system,
but,
would that, and I'm in the theater, would that be considered liquor inside the theater?
I think you're okay there.
There's the bar right there.
I have
you know?
To interject something here, guys. Hearing all this,
go
just it makes me so proud. And the thing is, Night of the Living Dead, the history of it, the life of it, it's still going strong. You know, the one thing I got to say, you know who would be super proud of all this is Dwayne Jones. I wish he could be with us.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What a class guy he was to work with. Just a super human being.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Well, if you want to, I you know, it's weird. I would never be asked, I guess, about Dwayne or anything. Of course, I didn't know Dwayne, but when we did do the shooting and making of One for the Fire, I mean, obviously, Dwayne was a subject of a lot of questions and a lot of very personal and heart-wrenching and heartwarming stories about Dwayne and his relationship with everybody involved in Night of the Living Dead. So I almost feel like... a friend I never got to meet, you know, because I got to know him so intimately. So, I mean, I know that that's always something the fans, you know, remember and all these guys. I mean, regardless of what we did or didn't see in the film, there was a lot more deeper tribute and heartfelt sentiment about Dwayne, and I know that everybody misses him. But you know what? He absolutely will be there in the theater in spirit.
That's right.
That night up on that big screen, and I mean...
And we have to thank John
is incomprehensible.
Well, we
know?
Have to thank George and John and everybody for having the foresight to give Dwayne that part in a time when it wasn't normal to do such a thing. And they made him the hero of the picture, and you guys deserve credit for that.
And we didn't skip a beat. There wasn't any big discussion about it. It was like he came in and read, and he did the best job, and that was it.
That part was originally written for, like, a truck driver. Right.
Yeah, it was.
In the original script, it just says truck driver. And,
truck driver.
Rudy
yeah.
Ritchie was going to play the part, but even Rudy said,
"Right,
Dwayne should do it." So it was yeah. unanimously agreed upon, and there it was.
Awesome,
and, Russ. Russ, what do you got?
Dwayne at the time was living and working in New York, but his family lived just outside of Pittsburgh. And he came in 1967 at Easter to visit his family, and a mutual friend of ours and George Romero's introduced us to him and said, "Hey, this guy might be worth a look." He came in, he read, and boom, the decision was made. That was it. He had to be Ben.
that's, you know, that's something that's interesting to find out as a fan, as you get to know these guys and hear their story and the things that went on behind the scenes and in their lives as friends, you know, to find that out, that the casting of Dwayne was something that was purely based on the fact that he was the best actor, regardless of how the role was cast, and still the fact that Dwayne was just cast as a great actor still is never going to take away the fact that, whether you realized it or not, when Dwayne was that strong leading character, I mean, sure, you had the Sidney Poitier-type films and things, but usually race was the issue central to the film. So I think that if you would have made a deal out of it, I think it would have, just like you say, the ending would have changed the whole context of the movie. It wouldn't have been the same movie. I think that if you guys would have made an issue out of Dwayne's race and changed the script, I think that, that it would have made it not as impactful, that he was just a guy.
Right.
You know,
I think you're absolutely right about that. It was in our own little contribution to the whole civil rights struggle, in a way. We didn't have that in mind at the time, but I think that what you just brought out, a really important point, that because he was a man doing a job.
Right, not with you know, someone else's like overstated perception of you know, a statement on the race problem, you know.
Right.
And you know, I've heard Russ and you tell the story so many times, and George, about you guys, you know, when you're driving the print of the film to New York City, and you hear that Martin Luther King has been assassinated, and then how people subsequently you're taking the film to don't even like kind of notice the correlation here to the ending of your film. But you know, on top of it, I think what got missed in the documentary, and I always noticed, you know, we also had our cities burning, you know, race riots all over the country, the civil rights movement happening strong, Vietnam War protesting, the war every night on the TV for the first time. It's intertwined, because you can't help it. This was where you guys were living, your ages at the time, living in that era. I mean, you're going to, what you're experiencing is going to come through in what you create.
Well, one of the things that makes it, that has caused Night of the Living Dead to endure is two things. First of all, it is basically very honest. It's honest from the perspective, okay, a hokey premise of Venus space probe blowing up, or nobody knows exactly why the recently dead are coming back to life. But once that phenomenon is accepted, that the storyline was dealt with very, very honestly. And the second ingredient, which is something important for any young filmmakers, is there is an energy, there is a human energy that comes off of that screen and out of that picture and out of that story, just simply because it was a group of young people who said, damn it, we can do this, and let's just stay dedicated, let's stay focused, and get the thing done. It did not end up in a cardboard box in somebody's garage. We actually started it and finished it.
I don't care if somebody came in the door with a $600 TV commercial. We tried to make the best $600 commercial we could make, and we put all our energy into everything we did.
Now, I mean, there's such an advance in technology and ability to do things, and it seems like people, I can't imagine what you guys would have done back then with your work ethic, okay, with less financial restrictions because of this digital technology, things that are available now. I mean,
how do you look in a dress, by the way?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. If you go on my Facebook page, there's some pictures that leaked.
Don't feel bad about it, because if you look at Batman the Dark Knight, I got stuck doing the same thing.
Kyra and Bill show up in this basement where I'm doing this thing and everything, and I'm in this getup, and Kyra and Bill asked me the question down there in the basement while in the middle of the shooting of this thing, while I'm trying to be a scary guy. Billy, why in the world would you want to be a manager, a personal appearance rep, book all of your friends here in these shows, do all that hard work when you could make such a more, you know, flourishing, easy living as a Cher impersonator? You know, that's my real deal. You know, Cher did nothing to deserve the comparison, in my opinion, after I saw the pictures. But I think that we should also mention the late Carl Hardman, who I was honored to be a friend of, who passed so recently, and you know, Kyra's dad, and go ahead, guys. Man, I mean,
another really, really great guy to work with.
Oh, yeah, he was.
And a really key part of the success of Night of the Living Dead.
Oh, yeah, yeah, for sure.
And Vince Cervinski and Keith Wayne.
Yes.
Yeah. Back in those days when we were struggling and sleeping on the studio floor and putting all our money and every spare penny into buying equipment and trying to get to where we could do our first feature film, and we would the weekends would come, and Vince was considerably older than we were, a Second World War veteran, and come the weekend he'd give each of us a check for $25 sometimes when there wasn't hardly any money in the bank account. And he'd say, "You guys are young," he said, "you got to go out on the weekend and do something." And back then, for $25, you actually could go out Friday and Saturday and have a bit of a good time. I was just thinking about that last night, lying awake, about how Vince would do that. And
that's awesome.
That's cool.
Put it all over one more time. Saturday Nightmares. Lowe's.
That's it, man. Saturday Nightmares. The Landmark Lowe's Jersey Theater, Jersey City, New Jersey. Everything's on the website, www.saturdaynightmares.com. Check the program for all the events. We're still adding stuff on now.
And John and Russ will be there along with the rest of the guys. So, guys, thanks very much for being on. And,
hey, man, be there. Be square.
Thank you.
Saturday Nightmares is weird. Saturday Nightmares to the death, baby. Okay?
Well, I've got to say something, too. John and Russ, on a personal level for me, and I know for Pete, too, this has been a dream come true and a true honor. And thank you for taking the time out, everybody involved, but especially you two guys. Thank you so much for making our dreams come true for doing this.
Well, thank you. We greatly appreciate the job that you're doing.
And we're looking forward to Saturday Nightmares. Let's go get it. All right.
Thank you, guys. See you there.
Good night.
Okay.
Yeah, see you there.
Mike.
They're coming to get you, Saturday Nightmares.
Well, that about wraps it up for tonight. And, here we had two legends on, John Russo and Russ Striner. And Half-Breed Billy Graham, I haven't talked to him in a couple of years, who's down with Combat Zone Wrestling, and the promoter, Mike Lisa. This is going to be one hell of an event. So check it out. I'm going to be there. It's Back to the Fucking Grindhouse. And this is 42nd Street Pete saying stay sick.
Street Pete's Grindhouse is a production of Jackalope 105 FM.
Do you feel that? Oh, shit. Oh, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me. I can see inside you the sickness is rising. It seems that all that was good has died. Oh no, the world is a scary place. Now that you've woken up the demon in me.
Bobby, will you give it to me?
Two, three, four.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and let it flow into me. Why can't you just fuck up and die? Get down with the sickness. Fuck you, I don't need this shit. I'm down with the sickness. You stupid, sadistic, abusive fucking organ. Down with the sickness. Here it comes. Get ready to die. Get ready to die.
Come on, here we go again, motherfucker, yeah, yeah, yeah. Come on down and see the idiot right here, too fucked to beg and not afraid to care. What's the matter with calamity anyway? Right, get the fuck out of my face. Understand I can't feel anything. It isn't like I want to sift through the decay. I feel like a wound, like I got a fucking gun against my head. You live when I'm dead. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. People equal shit. Come on. Me now, so fuck it. Blood on my face and my hands, I don't know why. I'm not afraid to cry, but that is none of your business. Overdo it, don't tell me you blew it. Stop your bitching and fight your way through it. I'm not like you, I just fuck up. Come on, motherfucker, everybody has to die. People equal shit.